We have an esteemed speaker with us, Alisa Jang, and I'm going to introduce her in a second. But before that, just a little bit about myself. I mean, our company, we are about 55 participants. I am from, I live in Long Island here in New York. I have a company. I'm a multifamily syndicator. Just a little bit about myself is, I come from a very strong technology and management background. And, I have owned single families. I have owned multifamilies. And for the last 3 years, I've been doing syndications, right? And, my competency is basically trying to reduce the redundancies from the processes. And that actually, that is helpful for improving the NOIs from any project. And because of that, we are able to produce good results for our investors. And over the last couple of years, I have built a passion for assisted livings also, where, we are trying to help seniors. And that is the business that I'm trying to improve. That is all about me. I'm here to share the knowledge, the wealth, helping investors, and we plan to do more syndications in future in multifamily. Please do stick around till the end, because we are going to talk. We will have an opportunity that we are going to share with you very briefly, and then we will have an opportunity to interact or network with the other folks who are there on this call, right? I mean, I know a bunch of you who are there on this, but please try to hold your questions towards the end, and during the networking time you will have one-on-one interaction with the other participants who are basically joining today. That was all my introduction, and I'm gonna talk about the guest that we have today, Alisa Jang. I know Alisa for last couple of months, but I was very, very impressed with what she is doing. She has about 11 years of experience in real estate, and she's of course accredited investor, and she focused on value add C-class family properties, right? She has passion for providing quality and affordable apartment rentals in and out of state. Basically, she lives, I think, in Arizona, right, Alisa?
I actually live in Seattle, but I invest in Arizona and Dallas.
Yeah, you invest in, you control about $100 million worth of portfolio in Arizona, Washington, and in Texas state also, right? And you have done many, many deals, and you are very experienced in partnerships and syndications, and, you have designed many good systems and implemented for constructions and professional property managers. He has founded Easy FI University, Easy Real Estate LLC. I mean, she has many companies. One of, these are just some names. So I was very, very impressed by Alisa, and I asked her to come to our, so to say, podcast or webinar, whatever you want to call it. And she graciously accepted. And today we're going to talk about a case study, the work that she has done in Phoenix. So format is for about 30, 40 minutes, we are going to talk about this case study. So guys, please hang on towards the end, because there would be a lot of things, important things towards the end. So Alisa, all yours now. I want to give you the
Thank
control.
Thank you.
You have the control, share whatever you need to do. And I'm
here. Let's see. Thank you so much, Prashant, for that warm introduction. It kind of makes me blush. just a little bit, like I'm just been doing some multifamily stuff. We start investing in 2009. We have a lot of content to cover. I've run these type of presentation all the times, and it always goes over because there's just so much information. And Prashant has given me another challenge that he's limiting me to like 30 or 40 minutes. So we'll see if an hour 20 minutes content can be condensed into that. So really important, make sure you mute yourself. If you're not, I may call you out. It's kind of how I run. Cool. Really awesome. So today I'm going to take you through the case study for Silver Oaks, which is a 36 unit in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm able to do this presentation because this is a project that we just own ourselves. So I do syndication like Prashant himself, but this is a deal that we just put together with a partnership, so with a tenant in common structure. So I'm able to kind of share that information and not subject to SEC, regulations over here. And Prashant, if you can kind of like make sure folks who are not muting themselves can mute themselves.
So, Alyssa, you have to mute yourself, unmute yourself. I just muted.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Sorry. Awesome. Thank you. Cool. So who am I? Let me just put this on the small side. So I've been investing since 2009. You know, for some of you guys who are interested in my personal story, I've been guest on multiple shows before. And I think there is another episode of Best Ever podcast is coming up soon. So I kind of talked about a little about who I am. So I own about 172 units in Washington, Arizona. Actually, that number has increased. I always forget to update this sheet as the month kind of goes. So I'm about principal on about 1,400 units, maybe 1,500 around there in Texas and Arizona. I invest in another 1,500 plus unit passively. I think it's very important. As syndicators, we also test our own products, not necessarily our own products, but also passively invest in other people's project. Gets to know like how, like it's called a testing of products, right? So I invest passively. It's a great way to grow my net worth without doing anything. And I'm also principal on projects as well. I also own projects 100% by myself or with partners. So I mostly focus on B and C class multifamily building with value add strategy. What that means is that we basically do some sort of renovation or we make the management better. So to derive value and in case like increase the valuation of the projects and increase the rent, like monthly cash flow as well. I have performed the multiple 1031 exchange that actually helped us launch our first couple of fourplexes ourselves. And then kind of the rest of it is the history. And I've also put together about two tenant in common structures before. We'll kind of talk about this a little bit more because that's how Silver Oaks was put together. I've performed multiple BRRRRs for multiple of you guys who doesn't know. It's basically a fancy name for value add. It was coined by Brendan Turner from Bigger Pockets. I think it's called a buy, renovate, rent, refinance, or repeat. And I'm founder of EZFI University. The logos above over here, which is an education program that help others do what I do and to reach financial independence sooner than they have ever dreamed of. And I'm also a founder of Easy Real Estate, which kind of does the syndication investing side of the business. Cool. So we're going to be talking about, I'm going to be using this as a case study, but really instead of just talking about the specific about the deal, I'm going to share about like how we actually finding a deal because, you know, you guys can raise your hand. I think finding deals are like the one of the hardest thing to do. And how do we actually structure the deal and then what we did with the project. And then the hope is that every project is different so that you guys can take away with lessons that you learned that you can apply, you know, essentially to your own operations or projects that you're interested in investing in. So the first step when we're doing acquiring a business, right? Like when you're first starting getting into a market is the first step is picking a market. So at that time when we purchased this property, which is the first one in Phoenix, we always believed in investing our own money into something, try it out, see if it works before we bring any investor into our deals. So in Phoenix is a new market. So we had capitals that we want to deploy into that market. So there was month and month of building relationships and et cetera. Before that, we have kind of picked Arizona as a market that we want to target on. So how do we actually pick a market then? At the time we were successful in Dallas, we already have a few deals there. But you know, I live in Seattle. So I am very, how do you say it? I'm very explicit to, I want to make sure that whatever the lifestyle that I have envisioned is going to be, you know, it's designed properly so that I can live that lifestyle. Because for all you guys listening, some of you guys want to use multifamily to quit your day job, which I did. I didn't really want to quit my day job and yet have another day job that is posting restrictions that I did not want to deal with. So to me, it was very important to find partners a foot on the ground so that I can invest remotely. So which is why I live in Seattle. Right now, I'm actually in California. I've been spending the last 3 months traveling, and I'm planning on spending another two more months traveling and just kind of dodging the Seattle winter, which is not very nice. So, you know, and then it's also pretty good for social distancing right now. So right now I'm in the California beach house, and not mine, but away from all the populations essentially. But how do we pick a market? So in the beginning of 2019, actually it's towards the end of 2018, we have kind of decided that we need to kind of branch out from the Dallas market. And you know, we're just kind of looking around for all these markets. There's about 10 markets in the country that is really growing. If you really count them, maybe 20. You can invest in any of these markets and be successful. But all of them are very competitive. So we picked the Phoenix. There's a couple of reasons, because Phoenix is very close to Washington, Seattle, where we live. There's direct flights to there very often. You know, just for a convenience factor, it is kind of warmer. It's nice to visit. And also it is a growth market. So we saw a lot of data charts that kind of shows the rent growth is phenomenal in that area. When I visited Phoenix, I realized it was like Washington market 2 years ago or 3 years ago, where Washington market was doing double digits rent growth. And this is what I observed in Phoenix market. There's a lot of kind of signs and data that you can pull from these reports that we subscribe to. So what we look for is above average rent growth market. So 2%, more than 2%, and population growth more than that. I'll share some slides later on Phoenix, what that actually looked like. And then we also want to pick B minus location or better, because we had some C-class asset, C location, and they have been traditionally very tough to operate on. They can be successful. Now, this project in particular, because it has nothing to do with COVID, it was like really hot market. So we were okay with doing a C minus location. There's a specific uniqueness about this project because it was the only 2 and 3 in the vicinity of that whole 5 mile radius, and it's right across an elementary school. So that's a uniqueness of the asset. So again, there's always exception to the rules. The reason why we made an exception to the rules over there is because it was a very unique asset in terms of unit mix and compared to all its competitors, right? So looking for that specific, unique specialness on like a finding diamond in the rough, essentially. And we usually target about above 70% total return and 7% cash on cash. This is kind of the same metrics for our investors as well as stuff that we invest ourselves. And in fact, the stuff that we invest ourselves may have a slightly lower requirement because we may take on more risk. And also because if we did 1031, maybe the requirements are a little lower because all the tax saving is not accounted for over here. So, and then we want to take a long-term fixed loan. That was a big thing for us. And usually we look for above 100 unit for syndication. That rule gets shattered as well, because recently we just syndicated a 27 unit, which is tiny, got oversubscribed within 4 hours sending out an email. And we look for unit costs less than 150K. But that being said, again, this is a little bit of softer rules because we do purchase property that is more expensive than that and it makes great profit. But in general, these are kind of like how we pick the markets. And the reason why I would say another thing that's very good to note is affordability gap, because now if the mortgages are such a low interest rate now, if people can make the payments to the mortgage, even if you're in a really good A location, you're gonna experience some turbulence in terms of turnout tenants because people can just go buy a house versus renting. So, you know, I've seen a lot of recent value add, you know, deals out there that even though they're in really good location, sometimes you kind of have to look at, could you really push that rent to that amount? So this has been lately a focus for us to see it, because we've learned a few lessons from our even A-class location during the Corona time on that. So these are just some metrics. When we look at the top employee growth, there are charts that you can read. You can subscribe to like Moody's Analysis or Berkadia or any of that. Some of these are free and you can kind of see what the top markets are. Phoenix is obviously one of these, right? But the percentage of changes is huge. That's like probably number one. Seattle, I'm in the market. That's exactly the same. These two market, like I said, is displaying a very similar pattern, but Seattle is like 2 or 3 years ahead. Now there's pretty much no rent growth in Seattle, but Phoenix is like still going. So effective rent growth is another thing that we look at. We talked about that before, so I'm gonna fly it through it. And why Phoenix market? So why do we focus on Phoenix market? Because Maricopa County is like the largest in terms of population, the whole country. It's probably double than the second one up, which is Riverdale. And Riverdale, California is next to Maricopa County. So all these folks are kind of investing in Phoenix, you know, because it's really close. It's fifth largest city in the nation. And it is the fastest growing. It just ranked number one in Q2. I don't know, like I haven't really checked. It and Seattle has been kind of neck to neck in terms of number one and number two. At Q2, it's at an 8.4 year over year growth before COVID. And then at 5.4% even during COVID, Q2 report shows a 5.4% rent growth over there. And Phoenix has a very low unemployment rate, probably the lowest in the nation at 8.3%. So, and it's a landlord-friendly state. In fact, funny fact is that when we own Silver Oaks, the government actually had a relief program during COVID, and they actually paid us for tenants who did not pay for the rent. I have property in Dallas, I have property in Washington. Nobody else has given us money in that regard, other than the Phoenix market. So here's the other stats in terms of why Phoenix is great during COVID, and it is, you know, doing well. It's kind of like the darling of the country right now. And here's another like top six market comparison here. You know, the Florida is in a different report, so it's not here. We're not doing like compare to compare. But as you can see, we have San Antonio, we have Austin, which arguably a lot of people say is the best market, right? Salt Lake City, it's actually a little bit hidden gem. Dallas and Houston, all these are phenomenal markets. Love to be in all of them. In fact, we're in two of them and want to be in Houston. But as you can kind of see, when you stack all these with the rest of the market, they are like the best, one of the best over here, even compared to Austin. We actually did a one-to-one comparison with Austin. They're pretty neck to neck, but the growth is phenomenal in terms of rent growth. And this is a number that we really kind of look for, right? So like, as you can see, they're double than the next one up, which is Dallas on that. So, then the second step, once we picked our market, so we've been kind of flying to Phoenix a lot. So that's kind of how it started. And then we want to build a team because we've been really successful everywhere else because we partnered up with people. So in this case, I met my partner through a network group, we assembled a team, and their responsibility is supposed to be foot on the ground doing asset management. I kind of serve as more like the experienced person walking them through that. Before this deal, they never had any other deal. So this is like their first deal. So also other teams through that local relationships, we've met a lot of other people like brokers, wholesalers, tax protesters. Like these are all the people that you needed to assemble into your local team because they're location specific. And then there's the national team. For lender, I use my guy usually at the Arbor directly as a direct lender. But in the national team, I think having a mentor is very important. So you can learn a lot of these things without making too much of a mistake. You will make a mistake, and mistake is good because you learn from them, you recover from them, you're so much more stronger. But with mentor, you can kind of not lose so much money, you know. And then CPAs, tax strategists, the insurance broker lenders, they can be all global. And I have a bookkeeper who's been saving my life. I've kind of slowly turned her into my personal assistant as well. Appraiser, security lawyers. So these are all like people at the national level where you need to assemble, which we did through our networks of people that we have assembled at that. But most importantly, we build very strong relationships with our local partner. And then we put a team together. So I just want to kind of show, I've showed this slides in a couple of the presentations before, but when you're putting a team together, apartment investing is a lot of work. It may look sexy, like on the surface, but when you really dig into there, there's a lot of work, right? Like as any business, there is a lot of work to kind of get them up. So it's very important to keep the team mentality in mind and then see how you can actually leverage other people's superpower and then fit into these seats. And in general, I think there's multiple roles over here, you know, not really a fast rule over here. Some people can do both. Some people can do one and a half of these and you kind of make a good team. But you need a person who's really good at finding deals. And then you need an underwriter who's usually good with number. And you need someone to like help raise money. You have to have the ability to raise capital. And then you also need someone who is, you know, I heard someone else was like a military background. That is like a great background. It, you will be probably a good fit as an operation because there's procedures involved and making sure there's a lot of follow-ups. And then I put experience as a horizontal bar over here because you need that experienced person to carry you through the whole deal if it's your first deal. And in this case, I was kind of serving as that, but I was also doing underwriting. You know, the capital side of things and also lending experience to the operation. But eventually I actually had to be the main asset manager working together with my other asset manager on this. So kind of had my hand in all of them. Okay, so know your submarket. So in the case of Silver Oaks, how we actually found the deal is we've been building relationships with our partners for at least like 5 months or so. Until they came up to us and presented the Silver Oaks deal because they were thinking about, hey, can we syndicate this? You know, when I looked at the numbers, it didn't really fit the bill for syndication. And at the same time, we were exiting a project. You know, after less than 2 years, we were exiting a project in Tacoma. We made about 100% total return on that thing, which is great, but we were thinking about doing a 1031 exchange. So this actually is a perfect opportunity to kind of get in. So I would say don't box yourself in a one particular model. Always thinking about how can you actually make a deal work. I've heard a lot of people talk about, well, the deal just don't work. But have you thought about different way to structure it? Could you actually just do a partner? You know, because syndication projects needs to have a lot of more margin in order to pay the general partners. But if you just own a deal, co-own a deal together, you don't have that margin and you can still make that work. So for guys who are thinking about getting into first deal, the other model may also work, right? Just keep that door open. And the third step is knowing your submarket. So by that time, we have visited Phoenix a couple of times, but our foot on the ground is a native Phoenix-born person. So he obviously knows the submarket very well. But even then, I will make sure that they actually drove the properties. So at one time, I was kind of coaching through them the whole acquisition. At one time, you know, I was asking them to do the rent comp. And then actually using an online system, I was able to kind of spot a few competitive like comps I want them to shop, and I actually had them to like cold call them, actually show up, look at the comps to see if there are comparable units. So there's a lot of due diligence that needs to go in, but you also need to know your submarket. So you know by looking at a deal, you know if this fits into the pocket of your criteria or not. Phoenix happened to be one of these market, and street to streets can have a drastic difference. So you could be on one block and it's really, really good. And the next block can be a little seedy. So same with Houston is like that market. Whereas Dallas is, you can probably look at the report because the radius is so big, everything is so sprawling. So within a mile, it's probably just only your property. So it's a very different, these market. Houston is a little bit spotty as well. So how do I get to know your submarket? Like if you're really serious about buying multifamily, you get to that market and drive the market, take the flight out there, meet the broker, do a tours, know your numbers, do a lot of research. So we had a month of building that information in our bank by flying over there and talking with a lot of people, third party people, right? And building that relationships and that trust with your partner. And how do you source a deal? Well, in this case, our partner brought it to us. They did it through building relationship with broker, nothing really math science over there. But you, the most important things is in multifamily, most deals are coming from the broker, but the brokers will have hidden deals. You know, even brokers I close deal with, they wouldn't present to me all the deals. They only give me deals they think I will buy. So it's a little frustrating sometimes to some of these brokers. But nonetheless, you kind of want to get on their top list. So get broker list. So how do you build a broker list then? Like these are all different sources, like meetups, LoopNets, and like, you know, broker website, PMs, like these are all different ways to meet different brokers. And then you have to develop a call script, learn the lingo, show the proof, get to know them, and really follow up, right? Like I have some top brokers. I keep on calling them pretty much every week or two. Asked them about deals, and I had them flat out told me one time and said, just call us every week because we never know what we have. And the volume exchanged so quickly. So, you know, never know, like some deals can be just done in like 2 days. So just call us all the time. So in that manner, then I'll call them all the time. But some brokers don't like to be called all the time. They like to be, you know, take control. So you just have to fill out what it is. So in this case, my partner built a really good relationship with the broker. That's how he kind of got the deal. But as that goes, I'll show some numbers later on. We're at the underwriting site. I'm going to show some number later on, but it didn't quite pencil out because if you add all the margins in, your return will be like around 6%, maybe cash on cash return. And then your total return will be about 65 or something. So nobody will be interested in that as a passive investor, and it's kind of in the ghetto. So it's not a project that is really suitable for syndication. And all syndicators thinking that they need a 100 unit above, not true. But again, 36 unit for first time syndicator, it's going to be a little more tough to sell. But no matter, because we looked at the deal, we see an opportunity, and we could have just do a 1031 exchange, and that actually fits our bill really well. And without that margin, I'll show the underwriting later, but underwriting just means analyze all deals. So when you're analyzing deal, you need a T12, is a trailing 12 P&L statements, and then the rent roll, the current rent roll. So then you can kind of dig into the number from here on. And then you need some sort of modeling formula. And then nowadays, you should do stress testing as well. And underwriting itself, like a whole workshop to do as well. But real quick, for people who are interested in doing syndicating or buying larger apartment building, I always recommend people to go download Michael Blanc's analyzer, deal analyzer. Costs like $200, $250, I don't really know. He and I have trainings on it. It really kind of helps cut down our spend on underwriting. And so again, our units were like at 700 per door per month. I looked at it, I did all the comp research. I feel like comfortable, I can move it to a $900, $850 to $900 plus the rubs. And that's kind of where we went. We ended up moving the rents, just doing a classic upgrade to $950 plus the rubs. And then for the three beds, we were able to get $1,120 plus rubs, which is way exceeding, you know, our expectation. Okay, so for due diligence, then you have to do the due diligence. Again, make sure you mute yourself. So next step is due diligence. So when you got the project under contract, which we did, we got an agency loan on this. Then we start doing due diligence. I actually didn't even show up for the due diligence because I trust my partner that much. But they did like some FaceTime, and they also took a whole bunch of video. I looked through all the reports. And then, you know, inspectors will write you very long reports. You should expect that out of your inspectors. And then through all that, it looks pretty solid. We know there's some deferred maintenance on this property, like the roofs and all the other stuff. We just had them all budget in because we already had early access. We kind of already know. So nothing really super surprised coming from due diligence, but we were able to ask our seller to give us credits towards closing based on the roof and exterior paint stuff that we have managed to negotiate with him. So in this case, we were able to kind of knock off about $100K or so on that. On discount, which is great. And we do lease audits, we do vendor inspection, we do costing. So what happens is on the day off, we coordinate with all the contractors, and they're gonna all show up, the roofer, the plumbers, the electrician, you know, the PM company and their construction units, they all show up and they, you know, inspect the units. By the way, like my partner also found another guy who was a local vendor, who is a independent contractor. And then he managed to give him like maybe a 4% out of our deal and have him be kind of the GC of our own construction. So it's a pro and con. We have total control over that. You're not just having your PM company that kind of runs the whole show over there. But the downside of it, we have to manage the books separately. So it ended up to be like total nightmare in terms of auditing the books and keep like receipts, invoices, and all that. So add a lot of more logistics, but we probably saved a little bit money on construction over there. That's kind of what we did over there. So again, finding creativeness, how do you actually save some cost is very important, and how do you actually increase the income is pretty important too. So how do we actually find the deal? In normal cases, like Prashant's doing syndication, et cetera, you know, you would need to build an investor database, have partnerships, and do a 506C, hopefully it's 506C, 506B, different kind of offering, and then closing on a deal. In this case, it's just our money, which is fine. But sometimes in this case, the lender has actually gave us less proceeds than we originally expected due to no fault of ours, because the seller has not kept up his collection in the last month. So when you have a downward trailing three P&Ls, like basically income statements, the lender don't really like it. So you need to really work with your lender, like work with your seller to make sure that they keep up their collection. And then this is what happened to us. And then at the last minute, we were 200K short because the lender wanted to like cut our proceeds. So these things happen more often than you thought. In this case, we were able to add an additional person to our deal and be able to kind of get that through. So closing a deal with lender. So the next deal is closing a deal with vendor. I talked about cutting off the proceeds and all the other stuff. Very simple. We try to work with agency loan on our syndication deal as well as on our own deal. So it was a great, I always talk about parallel businesses with my student. So in this case, you know, owning our own project, syndicating projects, they're all kind of parallel because you're using the same resources. You know, like I build a relationship from my syndication with agency loan lenders, so I can use them for these deals. And the lenders, agency lenders don't actually like small deals. So it's actually harder to get qualified for a smaller deal, like sub 5 million loan amount. So in this case, because I was already on their list, it was easy to kind of get. So through my experience, I was able to kind of bring the team along to sign the agency loan and get that done. So if it's your first deal or first two deals, you may want to bring in a experienced sponsor who has already has their loans, right, to kind of help that. You know, there are many other lending opportunities. You should diversify from just agency loan to hard money lenders and bridge loan, because if you're doing a truly value add projects, you know, you may not be able to do agency loan all the time because, you know, that's where the value is. Sometimes property is mismanaged, right? So you probably have to do a bridge loan or in some case hard money loan. In fact, when we 1031 out of this Silver Oaks deal, we got into a 24 unit deal and we actually having a hard money loan on this, but it was a very crisp clear how we would exit that deal. So I'm not really worried at being on that hard money loan currently because we're on trajectory to refi it in, you know, 7 months or so over here. And so sponsors, you know, you need to make sure putting in a solid team. So talk with your broker, like, you know, your loan brokers very often to make sure preemptively putting up the right team for that. And lots of paperwork. In this case, my partner did most of the paperwork. I coached him through it, which is great because then I didn't have to do all these paperwork, but lots of paperwork. The more partner you have, the more paperwork. Next step is operation. I think that's where the meat is. I'm going to show a before after video later, but we basically turned 18 units and there's a lot of tweaking going on. Not every single project is always like, oh, this is what I planned. This is how it happened. You definitely have to adapt to situation when they come in. So we were turning tenants, renovating, ramping up lease up. At some point, we were at like 70% occupied, which was kind of scary. But through some incentive programs, PM communication, we were able to kind of move them up. Also patience, you know, like I think my partner got a little scared at one point. I was kind of patient because previous project, we also had to take it down a little bit more, getting the tenants out. So it was a good attrition that we were going. And then definitely bonus structure on employees. And my partner was really on the employees. So, you know, we were able to kind of spot them if they were doing something that is not correct. We kind of go in and try to correct them. Books and accounting, construction vendor management, these are all the type of stuff that's involved. We don't have investor in this case. Well, I have a partner on my LLC. So I give him a report. In these type of structures, it's much easier when you manage partner communication. I just have very direct communication with the, I just have one guy, right? We just get on a phone call monthly, and that's pretty much about this. And we create our own bank account. We do the distribution that way. So on the syndication deal, it'd be a lot more to manage. And then also we have to pivot our plan. So when we finished the 18 units upgrade, we planned for 12, but we ended up having to do 18 because people leaving, you just have to do them. And then we have to kind of pivot our business plan. When COVID first hit is when we first put our deal on market in February, and then COVID hit, right? So then we discussed about taking off the market, keeping it on. We ended up keeping it on, but we have agreed that if we didn't hit certain margin, we have a number baseline, we're not going to sell it. So we're just going to be patient with this. So it was on the market for about 3 months or so before it got under contract at full price. So that was really good. But then the closing was a little difficult for my buyer because he was doing the 1031 and he extended and extended, like it ended up to be like 3.5 months before we closed the deal. So all encounter was like 18 months with all that involved. And during that time, we also have to manage the collection really, really well during the COVID. So basically right off the whole COVID was that property before we exchanged hand with that. So there's a lot of stuff that we have to manage over there. And then also a lot of communication. So, you know, the operation kind of continues. You make sure that you have a lot of cash management. So we didn't take money back into our account. We just left it in a capital expenditure account. So we build up about 3 months of reserve, and that allows us to kind of carry through the whole thing. We didn't end up having to use it, but that was kind of like one of the things that you just kind of keep in mind when you run a multifamily. And last thing is when we exit. So before we exit, we actually consult our CPA. We made sure the timing makes sense. All the books are closed in 2020. And instead of paying one more year of tax preparation, we made sure everything closed in 2020. Even though it's closed in November, it kind of got cut pretty close to that. And also working with them to kind of communicate with exit plans and all the other stuff. And we also negotiate with this buyer, obviously, on a few things. And how did we do? Just kind of conclusion. We sold the property 18 months, including all that dragging from the buyer. Then we 1031 exchanged the property in November 2020. We averaged about 6% average cash on cash throughout the 18 months. Holding, that's because we had to put in more money to renovate more units than we planned. But it's okay. It's a co-ownership. So I just want to show you guys this because something can be different from projection. When you do a multifamily, you never know what's going on. And then we achieved a 91% total return. That is more than 43% IRR. That is 20% more than what we project on total return. So that was good. And this is kind of the stuff that you're going to expect in a growth market like Phoenix.
Wow. That is awesome, Lisa. I think this is one of the fastest presentation and one of the most information-packed presentation I have ever seen. You know, you are like a bullet train. Those who listen to you properly, they would tend to agree that it has so much information on small things, you know, 1031 exchange, you know, how to find, select the market, you know, how to do the underwriting. I mean, small things, so many things that you covered in an hour. I mean, to me, it is very helpful. It was very, very helpful. I mean, I cannot thank enough, but you know, I'm pretty sure others would kind of agree to what I what I just said. Thank you so much, folks. Appreciate your time and be well, and we'll connect with you soon.